Good afternoon, good evening, and good morning. What's up, everybody? I didn't post an episode last week. Yes, I know. I'm a very, very bad man. I understand. I apologize. But today, let's think about today. Yesterday's yesterday, and today's today. We have a brand new guest on the show. His name is Greg, and he works for a little-known company, or a well-known company, depending on where you live, in the greater New England area, called True North Brewing. He's on the show today to talk about his company. You can go check them out at truenorth.com and any other platform that you can find. True North Brewing on Instagram, I'll be shouting them out. And I hope everybody's okay. I've been busy. Everything's going all right. I got a lot of things coming up. I got new songs that I'm writing, new songs that I'll be recording at some point. New podcast episodes. My goodness. Things are kind of getting bigger, I hope. So hopefully everybody's doing well. My busy season at UPS is coming up. I'm going to be sleeping a lot. So if I have trouble getting some episodes out as of late, I apologize. The thing about working at UPS, it's a great company. But the problem is that the sleep schedule is very, very difficult. There's no adjustment. You know, you try the best that you can, but at the end of the day, you have to, you know, really just shoot from the hip when it comes to how you're going to do the job. So other than that, I hope that everybody understands. Again, I'm really excited to release today's episode. It's a good one. And I want to thank Greg again for coming on. We had a good time chit-chatting. And hopefully you guys go check out their beer because it's phenomenal. Anyway, all right, here we go. This has been a pre-recorded message. And this is a Why You Laughing podcast. Let's go! Boom! What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Why You Laughing podcast. I am your host, and this is the show. We're going to get started. today, we have Greg, and he is the general manager, right? Is that right, Greg, of True North Brewing?
So I'm the territory sales manager for a good portion of Massachusetts, as well as the entire New Hampshire territory. So, we are relatively new in New Hampshire, and, you know, I'm pretty busy nowadays.
I was going to say, because your place is originally from Ipswich, correct?
Yep. Yeah, we've been around for about 4 years now. We're in Ipswich, Mass., which is right off 128. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's very historic, very rural.
Sure.
But the way I always like to pitch it is it's a beautiful area. You're right by the beach. You're by the water. And then Ipswich is obviously well known for its fried clams. So anytime somebody comes down to see us, they absolutely have to go to one of the clam boxes or Woodman's and Essex. And there's just plenty of really good places to eat around Ipswich.
I always love that kind of stuff because, you know, people take for granted. They always say, oh, there's nothing to do around here. I mean, really, there's not a lot to do around anywhere if you don't want to live there.
Yeah. I live in a pretty urban environment, but, you know, I like a nice rural area, and Ipswich is just so beautiful. There's a lot of nice outdoor parks, and obviously we got Ipswich Ale, and then in the past 4 years, we've really sprouted up on the craft brewery scene, and our brewery is just, it's a hell of a place to hang out.
It must be.
Right now, yeah. Right now we got about 17 beers on tap, so we're pretty unique in that we have a wide variety of things. Coconut vanilla stout. We got about 5 IPAs on now, many of which go out for distribution. We have 3 sours on. And then about a month ago with Oktoberfest, we had 4 German beers. So we try to pride ourselves on having a wide variety of things. And it's not like, you know, some breweries you go to exclusively IPAs or some breweries that are exclusively lagers. So we're unique. We try to do it all, and we try to do it all pretty well. So it's definitely a cool place to check out.
Well, for sure, what I want to say about you guys is, you know, when I met you, it just happened to be by chance. I'm always going into my watering hole, which is Main Crust, where you popped in Marlboro. Shout out to those guys. And they always, in my opinion, have had something new on tap. Basically, every time that someone wants to go in there and put something on there, sort of shop their stuff, they always do a good job. And I wanted to thank you because I'm drinking out of this huge mug, which yeah. happens to say True North right on it. So thank you so very much for that. And what I want to say about your beers, too, is before we get into, you know, how you guys got this whole thing going was everything I tasted was phenomenal. Like, there's yep. some sours that I'm not a sour person, but the one that you gave me, I can't remember the particular name or what it was.
That was Persephone's Glory. That was a pomegranate hibiscus sour.
Amazing. It was yep. amazing. And, you know, your IPAs and, you know, everything that you brought in that I tasted was great.
Yeah. So that night that we had met, we were doing a tap takeover, and we had five lines going, as well as another offering in cans. Northern Haze, which is our flagship, that's something that they had been carrying in cans. That does exceptionally well for us. Really fruit-forward, hazy New England IPA. You get some Citra, Mosaic, Ella, Topaz. That won silver for us at the North American Brewers Association, and then silver recently at the Great American Beer Fest. Wow. So, award-winning IPA. Then we recently came out with our Forest Haze, which is a double IPA. We kind of wanted to have something that would be the big sibling to Northern Haze. We kept it relatively low in ABV. That way those bar managers and restaurant managers are comfortable pouring something that's at 7.7. And since that's been out, that's really been kicking for us. That's been doing exceptionally well. On Untappd, it's been getting really great ratings. So we're pretty happy with how that's been going thus far. That same night, we also had our Mexican lager on, Cerveza. That's something that has really racked up a ton of accolades. Like I was saying, not everybody does a lager, IPAs, and all these other different unique beers.
It's rare.
Yeah. So our Mexican lager, that won silver 2 years ago at the Great American Beer Fest in Colorado. And then recently, wow. about a month and a half ago, it won gold for us. So,
oh my goodness. You know, well, congratulations on that.
Yeah. Wow. Not much different, honestly. But hey, for whatever reason, they thought it was that much better this year.
So how did you guys get going? Like when you came into the scene, how big of a company were they at that point?
So I think we're pretty unique in that we built the business to scale. A lot of these breweries nowadays, for whatever reason, maybe they don't have the capital, but they're starting in a really smaller operation. And then along the road, they're kind of building that infrastructure, maybe bringing in some more brew systems just to kind of scale up their business model. We're pretty unique in that we have this big, huge brewery. It's taken us a while to grow into it, but we're in our fourth year now, and we've been doing very well out of the tap room. And then distribution has really grown a ton. So in only 4 years, we've been doing pretty well as far as tap room sales and distribution. And it really just starts with offering a wide variety of really kick-ass award-winning beer.
Great. Great. That's awesome. So when you guys go out to find new places to put your product out, how is that? Is there a large variety of salesmen now, including yourself, or is it just a select few people that go out and try to shop around?
As you know, there's so much out there nowadays.
Oh my gosh, it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's insane.
and there's a lot of really, really good beer out there on the market. Yeah. So it's definitely saturated. I don't know if I want to call it oversaturated, but it's just so competitive. Whether you're selling in beer to that restaurant or you're selling it into a store, what we've seen recently is that everyone's putting an emphasis on off-premise distribution, meaning, you know, those retail stores, and they just have a limited amount of space. So while we do have a ton of really unique award-winning styles of different beer, it's hard to get somebody to commit to carrying eight different SKUs.
Right.
Ultimately, that's what we want. Is it always practical? Do they have the space for it? No. But it's just chipping away. You send something in that does exceptionally well, whether it be our flagship IPA, Northern Haze. And then from there, maybe you're hoping they bring in our double IPA, as well as, you know, those are successful. Down the line, you're adding additional SKUs, whether it be a sour, our Vincian, or our Cerveza. So you want to be greedy, but you got to be realistic about where things are going to do well. And the last thing you want to do is send something into a store, it falls flat, and there's so much out there, they don't want to do business with you again. So you got to be cognizant of what you're selling and where, and hoping that it will sell pretty well.
Which is the hard thing, because the amount of breweries that are around nowadays is astronomical. My friend Todd Kopiak, he just recently started Rustic Brewing Company, which is over in the Wilbraham Palmer area. And even he was saying that, and he knows the science about beer. This guy goes into, you'd sit there and smoke would come out of your ears. Like, you just, like, okay, yep. He knows way more than I'll ever know. But what's interesting about brewing companies these days is they're doing a lot of teaming up to make sort of a collaboration beer. And it could be anything, an IPA, a sour, or what have you. But do you guys ever think about that? Like, seeing how the other people... how the other people work, and maybe if you could make something happen.
Yep. So we, as far as collaborations, we haven't done a ton. There's actually a brewery in Beverly, which isn't too far from Ipswich, Old Planters, and they're a pretty small operation. Most of their distribution is through themselves, and you see them in few and far between places, but they do some really kick-ass beer. And we teamed up with them to do a mango milkshake IPA. Yeah, and that was something that did exceptionally well for us. Beverly, their high school mascot is a panther, whereas up in Ipswich we have some tigers, so it was our big cats brew, and it did pretty well for us, and it was a damn good beer.
Great. Yeah, man, it's always nice to find, you know, I'm a musician, so I'm always searching for something new on how to, like, what creates a certain sort of flavor to my style. You know, not necessarily branching out into different genres, but, you know, it could be that. And that would be kind of an easy thing for me personally, because I love all sorts of music. But I imagine as a brewing company, it's more difficult to find what works and what doesn't work. Like, you sort of... shooting from the hip with instinct when it comes to, okay, this has been done before. How do you differentiate that? Like, do you look at what companies do you look at that say, I can do an idea or a version of this, or do you try to stick to your own guns and say, this is what we need to do for us?
Yep. Honestly, I think it's a little bit of both. And we're always kind of looking and seeing what is out there. Something recently that I've been thinking about is, you know, the sour IPAs. I don't know. Have you had a good sour IPA recently?
I haven't. Yeah. The last sour that I had was the one that you gave me, which was tremendous.
So I've seen sour IPAs every now and again out there on the market. And some places I think they do okay. But the IPAs are really saturated. Sours are a little bit more few and far between. So it's really about doing something that's unique. We try to offer our core brands, our year-round items that are pretty unique, whether it be the Belgian Blonde or the Mexican Lager. So we try to keep it in one lane as far as, you know, doing what sells well and brewing what does well for us. But at the same time, yeah, you're always looking to see what's out there and seeing if you can kind of, you know, occupy a small niche in a market somewhere.
How did you guys come up with your logo? It's very intriguing. I love the compass. I actually have one of my rings has the same sort of idea on it. I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of idea. I love compasses. And so the minute you gave me that, I was like, man, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're, Ipswich, like I said, we are true north of Boston, which it's funny because every now and again,
I'll see somebody up in the New Hampshire market and they'll give me shit over Great North. Like we are true south of Great North.
Great black art blackest master.
Yeah. There's also a brewery in Acton, Mass, which is relatively small. They're true west. So, I mean, in today's craft industry, that, like I said, it's so competitive. There's so much out there.
Sure.
It's hard to be unique, even as far as names go. So when we were opening, we were pretty hell-bent on the name True North. In order to open up a brewery, you have to obviously get a patent for that name. And there was a distillery out in northern Michigan that was using the name True North at the time. So we had to kind of seek permission from them. Luckily, we had some like really strange connections with them. And we were able to kind of get permission.
Distant cousins or something like that.
I forget exactly what it was, but it was like some bizarre story about our CFO. He was from Michigan originally. And I think he had known a friend of a friend or somebody that had a connection to the distillery. So we got permission from them to use the name. But like I said, it's hard out there nowadays. We're always trying to come up with new beer names. That's like the most difficult thing to do nowadays.
It's impossible. Because everything has just been done over and over and over again. And like we were talking about before, to try to put your own spin and your own flavor on something is very difficult.
Yep.
But I mean, the fact that you guys have, I mean, in my opinion, anyway, I've been drinking IPA since we started the band, which was 9 years ago. And so, mm-hmm. you know, to have something that sort of piques your eye is very, very rare. 'Cause every time it seems like, you're like, oh, that's the same old thing, you know, it's every other brewing company. So, I mean, the fact that you guys are doing something different for me personally as a consumer is great.
Yep. I mean, it's hard. You can only make so many beers that taste, you know, pretty different. And especially where we do Northern Haze, which is a hazy IPA, you go out there and you look at a lot of hazy IPAs. Obviously, that main hop, you're always going to see some Citra.
Right.
We do some Mosaic in there as well. So, yeah, we're going to have a lot of fruit forward hop bills to our New England style IPAs. But at the same time, you know, you use quality ingredients, you have a passion for what you do, and you know that the product that you put out is going to be a good product.
I sat down with the founders not too long ago, and they sort of introduced threw their hat in the ring when it comes to seltzers. Have you guys, you know, and it's anybody's game at this point, you know, nobody has a patent on who can make seltzers and who can't. Have you guys ever thought about doing something like that?
So we actually do have seltzer in the tap room. And I think that's as far as it'll go. I do not want to sell a seltzer. I don't think I could. That is just a market that is so saturated.
It's different. Like, you know, I was so skeptical. I'm not a seltzer person. I didn't even want to try it. But, you know, when I did my tasting with them, I sat down and I started sipping on it. I'm like, yeah, it's not bad. But it's just, it's new. And so people aren't going to like it at first. So
it is eye-opening. A lot of times we'll do tastings at, you know, the bigger retail stores. And it's interesting. You stand in a store for, you know, 2 to 3 hours and you're pitching craft beer. It's amazing the amount of people that come in and they're just like beelining right to that seltzer.
Right.
And if they're not picking up seltzer, they're picking up some RTDs or they're picking up a High Noon. So, I mean, they do take a bit of market share away from beer. However, I think we're starting to see seltzers slow down a little bit.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, Truly, White Claw, maybe the Bud Light seltzers, I think they're still doing pretty well. And I think they've done well all along. And a lot of people probably looked at that business model and said, you know, why can't we jump in there with a craft offering, charge a little bit more, but people will want that craft seltzer. That craft seltzer market, that is a market that has just become way, way too saturated. And I mean, the distributors are still bringing these people on, which kind of boggles my mind. So that must mean people are buying it, but
yeah,
there's a lot out there.
Which, you know, as a podcaster, you hear a lot of these guys sponsoring shows. And, you know, obviously I don't have any seltzers as sponsors, but it's just interesting to see that they're trying to get the word out as big as possible. How do you guys do that with, you know, what you sell? You obviously, you probably have a website and stuff like that, but getting the word out, you're obviously going to these different places and doing different promos. Are you doing a lot of tastings, or are you inviting people to come into the to the brewery and check it out? Like, how are you getting your name out there as far as, just as far as when I've seen you?
So pretty much like you had said, doing any sort of events or promos at the restaurants and bars, that goes a long, long way. And samplings and tastings. Obviously, we're not AB. We don't have the money to spend and just, you know, plaster our name across billboards. So it's hard. You're not going to see a ton of neon signs in stores. You're not going to see a bunch of promotional material everywhere like you do with those other big names. So it's pretty much word of mouth, hoping that the product, the liquid that people try is great, and they bring it up and they talk to their friends about it. And it just kind of like a slow growth. The liquid is phenomenal. So it's just a matter of getting people to try it. And, you know, once people try it, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're big fans. Actually, I was doing a tasting at the Bear Store in Salem, New Hampshire. Somebody had come in. She was buying a 4-pack of beer. I don't know what she was buying, but she was picking it up for her husband. And she told me, she goes, "I don't drink beer. I hate beer. I had beer once. I will never drink it again." So when somebody says that, the first thing I do is I try with all my will to shove a sour on them. So I poured her a small little splash of our Turning Violet, which was a blueberry and Meyer lemon sour. She loved it. And then she just cleaned out the entire sour stock. She bought
mine.
There were three, four packs left. She just cleared it out. She's like, "I love this." Wow. She's like, "I'm buying every one of your sours."
Oh, that's amazing. You know, it's hard to sell an acquired taste.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the most difficult things in the world. But how big of a role does social media play with your guys' activity?
We do a pretty good job. It's a team effort on social media. Luckily, there are some very, very creative people behind our social media accounts. I am most certainly not the most creative person, but they're always coming up with great stuff, really driving taproom volume for us. And then recently we put an emphasis on, like I said earlier, we're new to New Hampshire, put an emphasis on really promoting our products in New Hampshire. We have somebody that travels up there quite regularly and goes hiking and, you know, takes in the beauty of New Hampshire. So we're out there trying to get all these pictures, you know, up in the White Mountains and, you know, by waterfalls and lakes and rivers and streams, and just really promote the fact that we're out there now. Like I said, very competitive. Once people try us, they like it, but we need them to go into the store and look for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I can imagine that, you know, especially with the pandemic hitting, like, how did that affect your sales and your productivity when it comes to, you know, sort of shopping your stuff around? Like, was it difficult when you guys, because you said you've been around for 4 years, so I imagine that as kind of a still a startup thing, it must have been pretty difficult.
Yep. For breweries that are relatively new, I would say we were in a pretty good spot. Obviously, there's a ton of guys out there
that don't
distribute. Something that really picked up in popularity during the pandemic was the portable canning lines. So there's a few portable canning companies that'll go around and they'll can your beer for you. That was obviously in high, high demand. These smaller tap rooms that aren't really putting anything out for distribution, all of a sudden they had to figure out how to make a name for themselves and make some money. Luckily, we were geared up for distribution the whole time. Obviously, on premise, the restaurants and bars, we suffered, you know, pretty drastic numbers. But as far as off premise, you know, in those stores, we did pretty well. I think everybody in the industry that was distributing last year, if they were pumping out a halfway decent product, their numbers were up across the board. So we did well in the stores. Everybody was sitting home with nothing to do and buying beer. But, you know, obviously those restaurant numbers and bar numbers account for a good portion of our business. So that's something that we're still trying to recover from. And it's a slow growth. In the hospitality industry, we've seen huge turnovers too. So, you know, you might have had a great relationship with a bar manager or somebody that was pouring your beer. Mm. Next thing you know, they're gone. There's somebody new in there. And there's just so much to choose from. So little time do you have to get in front of these people and tell them about your great product. So, yeah, it's definitely a slow growth back, but we've been doing well.
That's good, man. I mean, it's especially now, you know, when things are kind of starting to open back up again a little bit and, you know, you can get, and obviously breweries are opening up all over the place.
Yeah.
All over the place.
So, I was in Londonderry last week.
I love Londonderry.
I think there's going to be 5 or 6 within Londonderry, the Londonderry dairy area. Mm-hmm. They're everywhere. So,
oh yeah. Absolutely.
People really have a passion for supporting local.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I really don't know what constitutes local anymore.
I know. Right. It's like the greater New England area. Yeah. Well, guess what? That's not a small thing.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, up in the Marlborough area where you are in Main Crust, I guess we're somewhat local. I mean, I would say anything within a 2.5-hour drive from Ipswich, I consider that local.
And you know what? Let me ask you that same question, because for me personally, what I've noticed is little holes in the walls, you know, like little bars like that, they get a lot of attention by brewing companies because they know that people want to go to a place where they really won't be bothered. And mm-hmm. Main Crust has always been kind of that place where it's not rough and rowdy. It's not part of the college town in Keene. It's its own thing, and it thrives off of its regulars. And mm-hmm. the regulars, myself included, you know, we want to try new stuff, and we're always in there. So to see you guys, and, you know, especially when I got to meet you that day, which was great, you came in and just said, try everything. Try what you like. It's there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times you don't see that happening because the regular distributors just go in because they have an order. It's like, okay, we got to go in and drop this off and then leave. You know, you took the time to actually sit down, talk to people, bebop around the whole place. And that's what stuck out to me. And that's why I wanted to have you on the show, because I know that you'll take the time to get to know a customer and to get to know their wants and needs and why they enjoy that product.
Absolutely. So we really pride ourselves, and especially in bars and restaurants, in being able to offer something that they need. So from a sales perspective, if I go into a restaurant or a bar, I can usually pick out something that they should have on tap and hopefully something that we can provide them. So that goes back to us just being pretty eclectic, offering a wide variety of things. Recently, that has really been the sours. We've seen kind of since COVID a shift of people are less willing to put things in barrels and send them out for distribution to restaurants and bars. You're going to make more money off a package. And there's not as many people going out still. So there's less beer out there that's in barrels opposed to in package in retail stores. So there's a good opportunity to go into a place and say, hey, you got a great selection of IPAs. I have an IPA that I can offer you, but I mean, I don't want to be battling against Fiddlehead and all these other wonderful IPAs. Yeah, ours can hang with them, but at the same time, I want to be able to provide something to that bar or restaurant where they say, all right, we need your beer on tap. This is a great beer that we can offer, and it's unique.
Yeah, exactly. And if people are buying it, all the more reason. You know, they're they're constantly. I can't name. There has to be, you know, not to keep going back to main course, but there has to be at least 20 to 25 regulars that come in there every day. Yep. And every time, at least 80% of those people are buying IPAs or a beer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if nobody would come back for the same old thing.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I know I wouldn't.
Yep.
It's a, and I'm a creature of habit myself, but I enjoy trying new things. You know, I enjoy, and that was, it was such a contrast to me 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I would have had the same thing every single day of my life and not cared what anybody thought. But as soon as I started drinking IPAs, you know, particularly, my first thing was Two Roads. So Two Juicy was big back then.
Yeah.
And, you know, to sort of have that as a starter was great because then it branched me out and opened me up to a different kind of palate, you know, because so often people don't want to change. They want the same thing every time. Your beer is exceptional.
Yeah, no, thank you.
So, you know, to have you in there again, it was fantastic.
Yep.
You guys, how far, is it mostly the greater New England area that you guys are in? Besides, I know you said you were in New Hampshire and in Ipswich and stuff like that, but how far have you guys gone?
So we just started distribution in New Hampshire about, when was it, August. So it's been a few months now.
Okay.
What Great. We did that was pretty special was we came out with our Season of the Witch, which is a hazy IPA. So we launched distribution with about maybe four or five different core brands, things that are going to be in inventory year round, things that you can find and lean on and say, I love this. I'm going to go back to it when there's not a limited release or seasonal. But then a month or two later, we came in September, we came out with our Season of the Witch, which is a hazy New England IPA. That was also on tap that night at Main Cross.
Right. I was going to say, I tried that one myself.
Yep.
That was a good one. I like
so,
that one.
Being on the North Shore of Boston, right by Salem, Mass, a few years ago, we had some bar managers approach us and say, you know, we have a Pumpkinhead. You know, people will really love Pumpkinhead. We'll get our Oktoberfest beers. But beyond that, there's not a lot of good seasonal IPAs. So what we decided to do, what works well for us, is a hazy New England IPA. Did we put any pumpkin in it or any spice or any clove or, you know, nutmeg? No. We kind of just left it as is, a good hazy New England IPA with Citra, Vic Secret, Strata. So one of the big things that I always pick up on in Seasonal Witch is the pineapple-y notes. So that was something that we wanted to do, just a plain old hazy New England IPA. Give it a fall seasonal name, Seasonal Witch, and we sold it into about 25 accounts in Salem, Mass., only draft, so they were pouring our beer. And if you've ever been to Salem in October, it is just absolutely crazy.
Oh, it's packed.
Yeah,
it's packed. So I mean, we've played a couple shows over there, and it's busy.
Yeah,
very busy. Especially so in beer season, October's huge.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah. Salem has so many bars and restaurants; it's nuts. But yeah. Season of Witch did so well for us that first year that it was exclusively draft. The following year, last year, we decided to put it in package and we distributed it throughout the whole state of Mass. We have a small amount of business in Rhode Island, so it made its way down there as well. And then this year, we obviously started our distribution in New Hampshire.
Great.
So for us, that might have been the first opportunity for some people to try us. They saw that fall seasonal with a really cool can, maybe picked us up off the shelf. And after that, they're probably saying to themselves, you know, these guys do some great beers. I'm going back to that next time I'm in the store.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm picking up a Northern Haze or Forest Haze 4-pack. So that was a perfect way to kind of kick off distribution. We get all these core brands out there. A month later, we have our Seasonal Witch. So I think that was a pretty big success for us. And I think it's going to, you know, pay dividends in the next few months as we approach the holidays and people are really, you know, going to the stores, buying 4-packs and,
and bringing it home for holiday parties.
Which brings up a question of what you were saying to me about, you know, how you went into the Season of the Witch project with no intentions of doing what a lot of these guys do, which is go for the flavors. You know, when it comes to, you know, this season, like the December season and the winter ales and stuff like that, how big of a pull is that for you guys to sort of go in that direction? Are you going to stay with the idea of kind of being separate from all that, or do you think that you're going to try to have something that's familiar?
So we're kind of...
Is it snowing over there, Greg?
No. Like I said, I'm in the city, so that's my Ring doorbell. Every time somebody walks by my house, that goes off and it freaks out the dog. But it's a good way to spy on the neighbors.
Oh, yeah. Make sure they're not, you know, dropping dookies at your door. They're bags that are on fire.
What movie was that? That was an Adam Sandler movie where somebody dropped a...
Happy Gilmore.
Flaming turd.
Great movie.
He's got a lot of classics.
Oh, please. He was the best. I just finished watching a... I was up early this morning. I just finished watching the Chris Farley documentary that was on.
He was hysterical.
Oh, please. Yeah, and you know, that goes along with what we're talking about. It's everyone has their spin on comedy, on the beer industry, on music. It's very, very interesting to see how people start and finish their career. You know,
first, you're a natural. The fact that you just took that, you know, Happy Gilmore, Billy Madison, Adam Sandler.
Turd on a doorstep.
Segway it back into beer somehow. Yeah, I'm like, geez, you know, there you go. Look at that.
Hey, that's I've been doing this for a few years now. I think I'm trying to, I'm almost getting the hang of it. Almost. I'm close, Greg. I'm close.
Hey, that was one hell of a segue. But yeah, so in 2 weeks, we'll have Midnight Snow, which is a black IPA. It's a little bit more niche than the hazy New England style. You know, this
is black
IPAs. It's a little bit
very, very selective to people who enjoy those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The one thing that we got going for us is that in 2019, that Midnight Snow was the grand champion at the United States Beer Tasting Championship. So if you are going to drink a black IPA, hopefully you're going to drink Midnight Snow, which is a damn good one. And that's something that we've done the past few years. It's not going to be as prevalent as that Season of the Witch. We really just cranked that Season of the Witch, but we want to come out with a different limited release, a different seasonal every other month. Hmm. And what we've also seen a lot of success in is the sours. So when we do not come out with a limited release IPA, the idea is that we stagger it so that there's a new rotating kettle sour that's hitting distribution. Since our inception, we've done somewhere around about 20 sours. And our sours are pretty approachable. Like you said, it's nothing that's going to kind of put you on your butt, give you a canker sore, curdle your stomach. They're tart. They're almost like tart fruited ales. Usually one or two fruits, nothing too crazy and exotic. A lot of the stuff out there is really funky. We want something that's approachable, that somebody is going to enjoy drinking and probably have two, maybe three of. I love those exotic sours, but at the same time, I had one last week. It was phenomenal. It felt like I was eating a male, and then like halfway through, my stomach's curdling. So that's not necessarily what we want.
I have a friend who has been around since I started playing music, really. And he talks about IPAs, and he said it's kind of like drinking a can of bread. And it can be, you know. So it's nice to have those beers where you literally don't feel like you need to sit in the car for a few hours. You're ready to go. It's okay.
Yeah. That's why I love our Cerveza. It's a Mexican lager. It's 4.3. It's light. It's crisp. You can have two or three of them. You're not going to be hammered, and you're not going to be bloated. So that's something that I love. I think in part due to the fact that I'm
pretty IPA'd out. I do like an IPA every now and again, but if all I ever drink was IPAs, I would totally be sick of them. So the Mexican lager won gold for us at the Great American Beer Fest, like I said earlier. That's just a great, clean, crisp lager. It's got a little bit of flaked maize in there, which gives it some sweetness. It obviously has the German Pilsner malt, which makes it a Mexican lager. And then it's got a tiny, tiny bit of El Dorado hops to give it a little bit of a bite, but not a very bitter character to it.
Now, let me ask you a question about how you guys actually make your flavor. You know, do you have a certain group of people that work on putting things together and making it in, you know, I don't know what that machine's called, but it's like one of those big metal containers. Like, who actually does all that work? Is there a certain team of guys that do it?
So when we started, it was a father-son operation, Gary and Jake Rogers. So Gary, he had been pretty much retired at this point. His son, he had graduated college. He was out on the West Coast, and then he came back. He was working for Ipswich Ale in Ipswich, you know, not doing a ton of brewing, but just being around that process and watching it all and absorbing it. And then he had a friend, Seth Barnum, who was out on the West Coast as well. He was working for Breakside Brewing. And at that point, they realized that they wanted to open up a brewery. Jake said, you know, I want to do this right. So I want Seth involved. And Seth just does a hell of a job. He's our head brewer. You know, a ton of different things. It's not, you know, one style that he just harps in on and brews a ton of that. It's a little bit of everything. And the whole production team, they do an excellent job. You know, the production team has obviously grown over the years as we've grown. So they're continuously putting out great products, and it's always something new. There are certainly seasonals that we rotate every now and again, things that people love and they come back into production, but we're always experimenting. We're always trying to do something new, always trying to keep up with the trends, see what people are looking for. And, it brings in a lot of experimentation, but, you know, they just crank out great beer after great beer after great beer. So.
Now, as far as the marketing process goes, do you guys, because you were handing out stickers and mugs the last time that I saw you, which thank you so much, by the way. This thing is awesome. Do you guys do a lot of t-shirt apparel or do you guys do flasks? I mean, you know, flasks, I say flasks as like an example, but are there certain products that you guys have planned for the winter possibly?
Honestly, you'd be shocked at how pleased people are to get a sticker. It's really? Unbelievable.
I was.
It's a small little thing, but people love it, and it gets our name out there.
It's great.
We're at the point where we're still pretty new. Gotcha. We don't want to be hemorrhaging a ton of cash and giving things out all the time. But yeah, obviously we have promotional events where we give out some merch. People love free t-shirts. So when we can give them out, we will. Another thing that really makes people happy and keeps them loyal is pint glasses. So a lot of our really good on-premise bars and restaurants, you go in there, you ask for True North, whatever it might be on tap, and you're going to get it in a nice looking True North pint glass. Yeah. And, you know, you got to spend some money to keep people happy. You got to spend money to get your name out there and market your products.
It's very good.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, you just want people to try your beer. And once they try it, hopefully they're going back to it. There's a lot of inferior products out there, inferior beers that they're hemorrhaging money. They're spending a ton of money on marketing and free merch and all that stuff. And, you know, who knows if they'd be afloat if they didn't.
And, man, how satisfying is it to have somebody come up to you and be like, you know, your beer's great? Like, I know for me personally, I was working at the deli when the band started, and somebody came in and was wearing my band shirt, and then they told me a story about somebody that they ran into at a gas station in like Connecticut or something like that. And I was like, that's insane. You know, just to have that sort of connection with people. And as you said, to get your name out there is so needed, you know, especially in your industry, I would think, you know, with trying to to get your company to be as big as it can be.
Yep. So our owner, Gary, he was actually telling me a story over the weekend. There were some people that came in. They were originally from Belgium. And they were listing off all the Belgian beers that they typically drank and things that really resonate with them and they love. And then they were trying our Vincian, which is a Belgian blonde. It won gold at the World Beer Cup in 2018. And they said, hands down, our Belgian blonde, you know, it's a flagship core brand. It's available year round. They said that was the best Belgian beer that they've ever had. So these are people that know Belgian beer. They know traditional style Belgian beers. Right. And they said ours is the best. That's something that we hear every now and again. But you never get sick of hearing something like that.
No, and Belgium's huge with breweries. Like the beer, they love their beer. They really do. My buddy Cal has a podcast called Brews Roundtable. Mm-hmm. And he has a guy from Belgium that follows his podcast and loves it.
So, that's awesome.
And especially for somebody who's a small-time podcaster like myself, to get just one person to know that even just one guy likes the show and likes what you're doing, it's so satisfying, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, kind of to wrap this thing up a little bit, what's your go-to when it goes to your, when it comes to your company? Like, yeah, obviously you said you're not a huge IPA guy, but you like it once in a while. Do you go for the sours yourself?
I was never a big sour guy until recently, honestly.
Really?
I think our sours got me into them, and I'll drink them a little bit more frequently. To nail down a style, oh man, that's a hard question.
Oh, it is, because there's so much out there. There really is. There's so much to choose from.
Something that I've really been enjoying recently is our Coco Nilazilla, which is a coconut and vanilla stout with lactose in it. I think you actually tried it, but who knows? You tried so many things.
I didn't try it. I didn't,
you
didn't try it. No, I'm not a coconut fan, but I know 1,500 people that are. So, I mean, and who knows? Maybe I will lower my guard and try it out one day.
honestly, the coconut's not overbearing by any means.
That's a good thing.
It's pretty well balanced. You get a tiny little bit of the vanilla. I think the vanilla outweighs the coconut, but that's something that I've been enjoying. Like I said, the sours are always pretty good. Our Mexican lager, that's something I always like to lean on. Honestly, my favorite beer probably changes on a weekly basis. It's hard.
Sure.
We do a lot of good stuff, and there's a lot of really good stuff out there, which is great because I think a lot of consumers are similar to me in that, yeah, they might have an allegiance to one thing that they like every now and again, but at the same time, they're willing to try a bunch of new things.
Great. Oh, that's awesome, man.
What about you?
Me?
IPAs?
Well, you saw me that one night. I believe I had a rusty nail in my hand. It varies for me. I'm an IPA man. I love IPAs. You know, it's especially since, you know, through the years, different venues that we've gone to. And, you know, that's an interesting thing, too, is you go to places when you're playing that you never expect to have beer. Like, I went into there's this place called Luthier's over in East Hampton. And they are a guitar shop. They fix guitars. They sell guitars. They have a bar with beer lined up. I'm like, this is insane. And they have a back with a kitchen now and IPAs and wine. It's like all these different places are throwing their hats in the ring to where the variety is just insane. Yeah. So it's always nice for me to try different things, but yeah, I always like trying different IPAs myself. You know, I've never been an ale person. I think it's probably just because I was always around IPAs growing up, you know, like my bandmates and then other bands that I knew, they all had different IPAs, especially the shops that carry 100 kinds of different IPAs. Yeah. So that's my go-to personally. I love all that stuff. And especially trying something new, please. It's great.
Yeah. Next time I see you, I'll be sure to bring you our Share Hoppiness. That's something that almost exclusively at our tap room. But that's an IPA. It's a hazy New England IPA. There's a few other places that carry it. We contract brew it for the Serenity Restaurant Group, which is in Mass. And there's about right now there's, I believe, 8 locations. So this is a hazy IPA, Citra, Mosaic, Amarillo. Phenomenal IPA. Every now and again, we will can it and package it and send it out for distribution. But for the most part, it's a draft exclusive item. That's something that's usually in our tap room. People love that. And then the Forest Haze, like I said earlier, it's just been really cranking for us. That's a phenomenal double IPA.
That's great, bro. That's great. Where are you going next?
As far as beers and styles?
No, as far as like distributing goes and shopping your product, you got a plan or like a map?
It's hard to say. I think we want to build not a grassroots in New Hampshire, but we kind of want to build up a fan base, have people come and pick us up in the stores. Our next big objective for distribution is to get into those super chains, supermarket chains. A lot of them, they'll do a spring and fall reset. We launched in August. So when they do their spring and fall reset, they're planning 6 months prior. And it's a pretty extensive process. But because so many people buy beer at those market baskets, at the Hannafords, at all those supermarket chains, that's something that we're putting an emphasis on. That's going to really be a catalyst to our distribution in New Hampshire.
And I know in Mass that there's a very select few places that sell beer, and they don't do it in their grocery stores normally. So you have to go to those little mom and pop stores. You have to go to the gas stations in order to get your what you want. So yeah, that is going to be a big thing for you guys to get into those stores. Where can people find you? Like, you got a website and stuff like that?
Yeah, you're not going to find much as far as distribution on our website. As far as, you know, the Keene area, and Chesterfields, we're in all the big deals, in Keene, we're in Brewtopia. There's a few other small,
Brewtopia.
It's a good
tremendous
place.
Store.
But there's a few places in Keene, the Keene, greater Keene area that will have us. We're getting our name out there. With those smaller off-premise places that you're going in and you're buying beer, they just have such a limited amount of space. So you might only see one or two of our SKUs in there. But, you know, the idea is hopefully some things do well and they're bringing it in more frequently and they're bringing in a greater quantity.
Where can people find you on social media?
So pretty much True North Ales on Instagram. And Facebook, like I said, we have a pretty good presence. We do some creative stuff every now and again. A lot of it is highlighting our brewery. Occasionally, you'll see us post a story if we're doing a tasting somewhere, if we're doing a promo. Great thing about our website is we update it very, very frequently. So you go on our website, truenorthales.com. You're going to be able to find what's on tap, as in what's coming out next. So for instance, right now you go on there, you'll see that we're coming out with our Five Leaves Left, which is a German fall lager with, brewed with apple cider. You'll see that.
I like that.
Yep. That's always a big hit for us. Especially obviously that's a true seasonal. We don't do a lot of true fall seasonals outside of like the Oktoberfest beers. So that'll do well. And then you always see our food trucks that are set to arrive. You'll see, you know, any live music, and those are always big hits. So if you are interested in checking out the tap room, I always recommend you go online. You maybe pick a day that there's going to be some live music. There's going to be a food truck that you might like, and it's a cool spot. You could find yourself sitting there for far too long.
Live music? Where's my invitation? I'm going to go work that joint right now. I'm coming down. I'm getting in the car.
No. Dude, come on down. We'll have you.
Oh, I'd love to. That'd be tremendous.
How many dudes are in the band?
I'm not in the band anymore. Unfortunate things have happened, but I'm still rocking and rolling.
No, we'll have you down. You can play acoustic.
Oh, yeah.
We like to keep things pretty quiet because we don't want to, you know, get people too angry. We are in somewhat of a residential it's not quite residential. We just have people that every now and again they'll bring up some noise complaints.
Who's so that
we
fat like to kid keep with it... the glasses yelling all the time?
So we like to keep it a little quiet. It's hard at a brewery. People get too excited to keep them quiet.
I got you. Awesome, man. Well, hey, everybody be on the lookout for that new Black IPA. Shout that name out again real quick.
Yeah, that's Midnight Snow. Midnight Snow. That'll be out. Unfortunately, we send shipments to New Hampshire pretty much biweekly. We're packaging that on the 18th. Typically, we ship on a Wednesday. So, unfortunately, we're going to miss that. That won't go out until the 1st of December, but that'll be something to look for. And then just down the line, we'll have some more kick-ass hours and a limited release IPA every other month. So, a lot on the horizon.
Awesome. Awesome. We'll be on the lookout. Go check out True North on Instagram, Facebook, whatever platform you got, people. Go check out their website. And Greg, thank you so much, bro, for coming on the show. It was so nice to talk to you. Thank you very, very much, really.
Hey, I appreciate it. Like I said, absolutely. Word of mouth, getting our name out there. So I really appreciate you having me on.
Amen. And I know we'll hook up with that music there. I'll talk to you off air, but that's going to be great. What a good opportunity for more people to come in and check out your tap room. Great.
Yeah. What do you play? Guitar?
I play guitar since I was 9. And,
gotcha.
I started playing. I mean, we could talk about this for hours, but I've been playing acoustically. I did Acoustic Thursdays ever since I was about 13.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a pretty good idea about, I mean, we actually played at Iron Duke, it was a few years ago, and we did an acoustic set, me and my buddy that I was telling you about before. So it's that the mixture of those two is actually phenomenal. And I think people are attracted to that sort of idea, mm-hmm. where it could be sort of a chill environment that you have to, you know, have a nice beer, enjoy some music, and have a great product.
Yeah. Now people love live music and people love good beer. Winning combination.
Winning combo. All right, everybody. Yeah, well, this has been a Why You Laughing podcast. Go check out my new song, Brain Damage. It's on YouTube and any other trick or treat platform that you can find. We are out there. I'm out there. Stay tuned for some new episodes. I'm sorry that it took me so long to get one out. I've just been super busy, and Greg's been super busy because he's traveling, and that's what we do here. We travel, we make moves, and that's what we do. Anyway, thank you for coming on the show, and enjoy. We are clear.